Welcome to Season 3 of Sidebars, Kilpatrick Townsend's limited podcast series celebrating Women's History Month. I'm April Abley Isaacson, a patent litigator and office managing partner in San Francisco. The campaign theme for International Women's Day 2023 is #EmbraceEquity. Our guests this season provide important perspectives on embracing equity and empowering women.
I'm Kate Geyer, a patent litigation associate in Seattle. We're here to focus on equity for women in the legal profession and have candid conversations with leading professionals from diverse backgrounds.
And I'm Megan Bussey, a partner on our patent prosecution and patent litigation teams in New York. Our guests this season are authors, legal professionals, business development managers, legal coaches, and consultants for lawyers. Each of our guests provide us with a unique outlook on equity in the legal profession.
Welcome to Sidebars. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce Megan Bussey, who will be joining April and I as co-hosts of Season 3 of Sidebars. Megan is a partner at Kilpatrick Townsend in our New York office. She concentrates her practice on intellectual property law with particular emphasis on patent prosecution, patent litigation, and opinion work. Her practice involves a wide range of technologies, including medical devices, mechanical devices, textiles, merchandising displays, and telecommunications. Megan regularly prepares and prosecutes patent applications in the United States and internationally. She has also been involved in various aspects of patent litigation, including invalidity and infringement investigations, drafting written discovery, motions, claim construction briefs, and appellate briefs. During law school, Megan interned for Federal Magistrate Judge David Kiesler in the Western District of North Carolina. Megan was also recognized in 2022 and the 9 years immediately preceding as a New York rising star in the area of intellectual property by Super Lawyers Magazine. Megan, welcome to Sidebars.
Thanks for having me.
Megan, I just have to say I'm really, really excited for you to be joining us for Season 3. And it was great because it really ended up happening organically. You were reaching out to me when you were listening to the episodes from Season 2 and telling me, you know, things that really resonated with you. And then you said, you know, I'd love to get involved. And you and I set up a call and I just said to you, are you interested in being a co-host? Let me check with Kate, obviously, and make sure that, you know, she's cool with that, which obviously was like a no-brainer, but it was just really great. And then Kate, going back to you getting involved in Season 2, it was the same kind of thing. I think I hit you up on Jabber, sent you an IM and was like, hey, do you want to chat? And then as soon as I asked you, do you want to be my co-host for Season 2? It was like, yeah, of course. So neither of you any hesitation, which just was absolutely thrilling to me. So I'm super excited for this season. I think it's great for the three of us that, you know, I'm a 95 grad, you're a 2008 grad, Megan. Kate's a 2019, so it spans 24 different years. And also, if you look at our ages, it actually spans 24 years between Kate and me. And I won't say how old I am, but, you know, someone could probably do the math. So I just think it's kind of a great combination of people coming from different perspectives and different life experiences, different generations and things of the like. So I just think this season is going to be super powerful and impactful. Megan, I'm going to start you out with our normal opener question of what made you pivot from science to law?
Having listened to Season 2, it sounds like a lot of people had a very similar experience that I did, where I was in college and studying physics, and I really enjoyed it. I love math. I love science. And I was so sure I was going to go get my PhD. That was just my plan. I wanted my PhD. And so to that end, I had a quarter or trimester at Dartmouth, trimesters off, and I had the opportunity to work full-time in a lab at Dartmouth working on nanotechnology. And within a couple weeks of being in a lab essentially alone from 9 to 5 every day, I was like, this is just not for me. I mean, it was so solitary. It was so slow going. I mean, just running an experiment and waiting to see the results, that I just knew I didn't think that was going to be a good fit. I said, I don't think doing this for, you know, 6 or however many years it's going to take me to get a PhD after this is really what I want to do. So I went to my advisor And I was really worried. And I said, I just don't know what to do, because what am I going to do with a physics degree? I mean, this isn't history or English or economics. I mean, who wants to hire someone with a physics degree? And he said, well, what did you want to do?
Well, apparently Kilpatrick Townsend, because two of you on here are both physics undergrads.
Yeah. Okay. So. Physics as well. And I think it was very similar where they said, what do you want to do? I said, well, before I went to college, I thought I wanted to be a lawyer. But I mean, now I have a physics degree. How's that going to work? And my advisor said, well, you should really consider patent law. And so I started looking into it, and I thought it sounded like a great fit. And, you know, I'm lucky enough that I went to law school, pretty much was pretty sure I wanted to do patent law, and was recruited by Kilpatrick as a 2L. And I did my summer associate year with Kilpatrick, and I just, you know, have loved it ever since. It was the perfect fit.
And I know when I was recruited by Kilpatrick, we were a little more stovepiped. Like, I was pure patent litigation, and there wasn't just a mix of work with prosecution and litigation. So how did you build your more diverse practice that's got both opinion work and prosecution work and litigation as well?
Yeah, that was a change when you came in. When I started at Kilpatrick, we had very low walls between those teams. So everyone was kind of expected when you came in to do a little bit of patent litigation and prosecution together. Our teams were a little more integrated. And so I really enjoyed that. I came in as a first year and immediately was prosecuting patents as well as working on a litigation. And I just kind of kept doing that. Even as the firm moved to these higher walls, I moved from our Atlanta office to the New York office, where there were no patent prosecutors in New York at the time. I did more litigation then because we had more of a litigation heavy focus, but I just kept working with everyone in Atlanta, and everyone was really encouraging of that. And it kind of bounced back and forth throughout my career. There were times early on when I did more litigation, and then there were times when kind of my lifestyle changed as I, you know, got married, had kids, and I ended up leaning a little bit more towards the prosecution side because of the flexibility it gave me. But I'm really grateful that even when the firm started, you know, these more, I call it like high walls between the teams, everyone was really encouraging of me continuing to kind of stick my nose in and continue to do litigation and continue to support the teams there. And it's been a really great balance for me. I love having the opportunity to prosecute patents and then also litigate them. And I think, honestly, it really makes me a better prosecutor for it and a better litigator for it, because I really see like the whole life cycle of the patent.
Megan, how do you define success?
I think I define success as feeling more happy than not happy. I mean, in my life, I'm constantly evaluating success in, do I feel like this is a good day? And generally, I think most people who know me, I'm a pretty upbeat, positive person. So I really just focus on, am I happy in this moment? Do I feel more happy than unhappy? And that's for work. You know, am I happy with who I'm working with? Am I enjoying the projects I'm working on? And am I stimulated in that way? As well as at home, you know, am I feeling like I'm present in my family life the way I want to be? Am I generally happy with how that's going?
How has your definition of success evolved over time?
I think when I was younger, I thought about success a lot more in terms of like measurable metrics. Like, are you, you know, the top of your class? Are you the number one recruit? Are you on, you know, law review? Are you publishing? Are you, you know, on Law 360, you know, regularly? And those types of accolades. And then it just kind of pivoted where I realized, you know, to a certain degree, those things can't love you back. A corporation can't love you back. And even though those make me feel good when they happen, if that's all I have, that's not going to be enough for me.
I love that, because as you were describing your definition of success, I was thinking of mine, and I think I'm still stuck. Well, I don't know if it's stuck, but earlier in my career, I'm still
tied to the measurable success metrics, like, am I on the right cases? Am I doing the mm-hmm. right things? And am I getting the right promotion? So I really appreciate that perspective of almost prioritizing what's important, not being tied to the corporation, but it's about the people and the happiness day to day. So I really like that perspective. And I think that's something I'm going to have to think about a little bit as I go forward in my career as well.
No, it's definitely something that evolves over time. My definition of success, this is something I've talked to my brother about, that I'm really close with my younger brother. He's just 2 years younger, and he's in a completely different industry. But I've kind of boiled it down now to, I feel like success is being respected by the people I respect. Just that's kind mm-hmm. of what it worked for me. I've been where you are, Megan, you know, and earlier in your career, and Kate, where you are. And I think it just evolves over time.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when I say like feeling happy, it goes into it in my mind that I know myself, some of the things that bring me happiness is having somebody be like, I'm so glad to work with you on this case. Or, you know, I really like this idea you had, or having a client say how happy they are with the work we're providing. So, you know, happiness is such a general term because I know that it encompasses all of that. It's when I feel like I'm doing a good job. I feel like my, you know, coworkers respect me. I feel like I have good relationships with people at work. And as well as, you know, when I'm home and I feel like my husband and I actually like each other and things are going well. And, you know, I feel like I have control in my life. All those things together, you know, contribute to my happiness. But definitely a little bit more intangible, some of those things that make me feel happy and help make me, you know, balance this really difficult career that we have, because there are going to be days that you're not happy and you just have to like have those really good days to help support you through those really tough ones.
I know when you and I have talked before, you said kind of in the sense of having kids at it, you know, when you were on the younger side, that you had to give up a little bit of yourself, mm-hmm. felt like maybe a little piece of your soul died, if I'm paraphrasing. How do you think you got from where you first thought success was to now where you think success is?
Absolutely. I think having started out thinking success was really these accolades, you know, I always joke about being the number one recruit, because when I was a summer associate, I would say I wasn't the number one recruit. There was someone else that the firm wanted so bad. And that little part of me was like, okay, well, I'm not the best, but like, you know, I'm up there at least. And that really bothered me for a while, feeling like I'm not the best, you know. And then I think what ended up happening, in all honesty, is just like you said, it tends to sometimes naturally happen as you get older. But I think I went through a period of time very early in my career where it was just really difficult on the home front. I had, you know, family members who were, my mother-in-law had breast cancer, was going through that treatment immediately after she finished her treatment successfully. My father-in-law was diagnosed with terminal cancer. My father-in-law, I actually knew before my husband. He's how I met my husband. So we had a very close relationship. And it just very quickly, while I was in this kind of first, second, third year where normally you're really feeling kind of like the rat race of I got to be on top, it very quickly put things in perspective for me that, you know, the most important thing I have is time. That's the one thing I can't get back. Time with my family, time with my friends, time with my husband. And so I think it just very quickly pushed me into looking at success differently and focusing more on, am I happy with how I'm spending my time?
As someone who's still kind of in the rat race a little bit right now, do you have any, I don't know if advice is the right words, but for people who don't have, for example, what you went through, right? They don't have something to force them to really appreciate more than the rat race at this time. Do you have any thoughts about how some of the more junior attorneys or even senior attorneys who still find themselves in that rat race, how they can gain that perspective and take a step back and really work on prioritizing what's important to them?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is you really have to sit with yourself on what you actually want your life to be. I always tell people, because I do have younger associates come to me and say, you know, how do I make this work? And I'm like, well, you need to figure out what you actually want from your life. What do you want your life to look like right now? And know that that's going to change every year, every change in season in your life, that can change. But you need to really sit with yourself and be honest about what you want. and then look at, well, what do I need to do to get there? And what are the trade-offs? I'm really big on trade-offs because nothing comes without trade-offs. If you want to be the best, you want to be the first chair, you want to be, you know, like the top litigator, that's going to require a level of commitment that's going to take you away from other things in your life. And that is fine if that's what you want, but you need to be honest about what your trade-offs are and you need to really sit with that and be comfortable with that. So for me, you know, trade-offs that I made was I went reduced hours after I had my kids and when all this was going on with the health issues in my family. And that meant I didn't get put on the biggest cases. I didn't always work with the biggest clients. It took me a lot longer to become partner. And I took, I mean, just monetarily, I took a huge pay cut. I mean, there's you can go on our system and see your pay throughout the years. And since I've been with this firm my whole career, I can tell you, I went on one day and saw that as a second year associate, when I went reduced hours, I didn't get back to what I was making as a second year for 6 years. For 6 years, I made less than a first year associate because I took a pay cut to have a less of a billable hours responsibility. And that was just what I needed at the time. And I was okay with that. And I went into it knowing that was a trade-off. But I think sometimes people don't think about what those trade-offs are and they don't get comfortable with them before they happen. And that can cause a lot of friction. So I would just say really thinking about what you actually want. Think about what you have to do to get there and get really comfortable with if you're okay with those trade-offs. And if you're not, then maybe you need to rethink what you really do want, because you're going to have to be really strategic.
And I love, though, that even though you talk about these trade-offs and how you kind of had almost a detour, you still made it to partner, right? Like there are alternate ways to success than the straight line, like just grind it out until you make partner. So even if you do have goals, right, it's the trade-offs might just be time to get to those goals, but it doesn't mean actually giving those up. So I love seeing kind of alternate paths to partnership. Just because I know it's there's really kind of one standard in the industry that everyone talks about, and no one really talks about, well, how can you take detours or try different things and still end up making that goal?
Yeah. And I want to dovetail off, I think, what both of you said, because back when I was your age, Kate, I thought the only way to success was grinding it out. And I did miss life opportunities. You know, I kind of sacrificed my personal life for it because I thought that was the only way to get there. I missed really close friends' weddings that now in hindsight, I completely regret just because I had too much work to do and so much. And it wasn't here, but I worked at kind of a sweatshop. It's well-known kind of sweatshop as an associate. And I just didn't think I could do it. I think, you know, I also gave up on personal life in the sense of maybe having a family, because as an older Gen Xer, I didn't see role models like you, Megan, that made it work to partnership, having the kids and the family and balancing it. You know, we used to joke around at one of my firms that one woman was having her second baby and she was probably on the birthing table, like on her BlackBerry, because like that was like kind of what it was, you know. So I do look at you as a role model for women at this firm, as well as just the, you know, the legal field in general.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think I feel like I'm happy to show people that there is another path. Mine was very windy and full of lots of detours, as you said, Kate. Like whenever I talk to people, I say that like it wasn't like I just went in a straight line. I mean, I did more litigation, then I switched to prosecution, then I kind of went back to litigation, and you know, really took a lot of finagling to figure out my ultimate path to partnership. But I think it also really worked, and I'm very honest with people that one of the reasons it worked was, you know, the people I had around me that I was working with. When I started as an associate, the woman that I worked with the most was a partner. She was a reduced hours partner. She had two kids. And she really just kind of, from day one, I saw that as being a very possible thing for me to do. I saw a partner who succeeded doing part-time. I worked with a litigation partner who also, you know, had kids. And so I just think that that was something I saw. So it didn't make me question it as much. I felt like, well, I can get here. I just need to figure out how exactly it's going to work. And it was you know, a lot of reevaluating constantly. So there were years when my kids were young where I was super reduced hours. I, you know, worked at the end of the day, the hours I billed was a lot lower. And then as my kids got older, you know, and my husband got more established in his career, I said, okay, well, I need to dig back in. Like, I want to, you know, shift my focus and I want to work more and I want to be more ingrained in my firm and I want to, you know, work to get more clients. And so then it kind of ramps up. And I did that. And I had, you know, a bunch of years coming up to partnership where I was much more busy with work. I was traveling a lot more and doing things that I just hadn't done earlier in my career because it just didn't fit with my needs at that time.
I love that that plays into two of the themes that we've been discussing on Sidebars. The first being just representation, right? Seeing people who take the alternate path, knowing it's available. So it's not a question of, can I do it anymore? It's someone has done it. And I see it makes it easier for the next person to come in and tweak their own path and make it work for them. And then you mentioned mentorship as well, as people who have been through it before can kind of help you move through it. Can help you move through the system and figure out the path. So I think those are two things that we've been discussing a lot. And it's great to hear how they have helped you get to where you are.
Yeah, and I want to go back, Megan, to what you were talking about related to family having health issues and things like that, because that definitely resonates with me. And I think a moment where I really had my epiphany about what success means and what my career meant to me compared to personal life was back in 2012 when my dad got very sick with a rare condition. And I basically project managed his health care for him because he wasn't married at the time. And, you know, he died back in 2016, but I had like 4 years to help him do all those things. And I had to cut back on work a little bit because of that. It really gave me some perspective of what you were saying before. It's your personal life, happiness, finding the joy, also seeing kind of what he went through and realizing that life is short, you know, I think I was talking to him when kind of the day before he died, he said something like, you know, just remember, yeah, life is short. You never know. You know, he went from being very healthy to not being healthy very quickly. And I remembered someone saying to me a long time ago, you're never going to wish you billed one more billable hour on your deathbed. Right. And
so yeah, it's kind of like, yeah. Yeah. And I think that when you go through something like that, I think it really does just jumpstart that perspective, because I think I've always been a fairly balanced person in that way. I think I probably would have ended up there maybe sooner than others, but it absolutely jump-started me realizing that, like, as I always say, like, time is the one thing I don't have more of. And so that leads to so many, again, trade-offs that I make every day in my life, that I'm like, I'm going to outsource so much stuff that I don't want to do because I want more time with my family, or I want to be able to focus on my work, and I'd rather be working or with my family than cooking dinner. So I just have no shame in the fact that I don't cook dinner. I will order it in. I have meal delivery. My husband will make it, you know, and that's something that we'll talk to people later this season about, who say the same thing, that sometimes you need to really think about every day how you get that joy. And if there's stuff that kind of sucks that joy, what can I do to kind of offset that? What can I do to outsource that if possible? And so I just have no shame in some of those decisions I make so that I can, you know, focus on the stuff that makes me happy and brings me joy.
When I know we talk about intergenerational differences, and one thing I can say, I know, Megan, you're on the kind of later end, you know, the earlier end of, I guess, if you want to say millennial, kind of older end, I hate to use that term. And then Kate kind of on the younger end of millennials. And then we do have the Gen Zs that are kind of second years at this point. I feel like I learn a lot from the other generations by having good discussions and communicating with them about a variety of things. And I know one of the speakers we'll have later this season has talked about kind of each generation picks up where the one before left off. Megan, maybe both of you could speak to it, but Megan, you first perhaps, because you know, you're on the older, quote unquote, end of millennials.
Yeah, I think I definitely picked up on the people who came before me who I think had one of the strongest work ethics you'll see. I mean, I work with people who it doesn't matter that they're a partner and they can, you know, push everything down. If we had to be there on a Saturday getting something done because we had a drop dead date, they were in there with me. And so I see that. And that's a really nice balance, I think, to this, you know, this, well, I want to have a balanced lifestyle and I, you know, I want to be happy. And it was a really nice, I liked seeing that kind of real effort and that dedication. And I think that that's sometimes where I love then looking down at the generation who comes after me. And I think that they have a really great sense of, you know, you can't love a corporation, it can't love you back. But then balancing that with, you know, it's not always going to be easy. And just because it's not always easy doesn't mean it's wrong. You know, yes, there's going to be times that you don't get enough sleep. And yes, there's going to be times that you need to, you know, miss a dinner with friends or, you know, work on a weekend that you don't want to work. And that doesn't mean that you're, you know, self-sacrificing and it's terrible and it's the wrong job. It's just there's going to be times that you have to show that dedication. And that's okay. It's kind of the overall average. It's the, you know, when people talked about work-life balance, someone once said, who I do not remember, so I cannot credit, that, you know, it's not a balance, it's a seesaw. You know, there's going to be times that one requires more of your attention than another. And so that's kind of what I feel like I'm kind of in the middle of that seesaw sometimes, where I saw like the work ethic before me where people just killed it. I mean, they just super dedicated, work, work, work. And then kind of the generation after me that I think has a lot more of a desire to have a life outside of work, which is great. And sometimes I'm like, but I still need you to stay up and get this done because we have to file it tomorrow. So you can hate me for a little while, but this just has to get done.
That's a perfect dovetail over to Kate. So
never Kate, as never Kate.
Oh no, never Kate. So Kate, as a female attorney who's on the younger end of millennial, what have you learned from those that came before you?
You know, I think it's very similar to Megan. It's the hustle. And I think in a lot of ways, what the generations that have come before me have done a really good job of ensuring that some of the crap they had to go through is not stuff that we have to go through. So I hear a lot of stories about like April, like what you've been through and some of the things you've had to go through. And a lot of that is we've been protected from it because the system has changed and you made changes to those systems. So I think one of the things I take from that is there are still ways to make things better. There are still ways that the system can change and we can protect the younger generation. So I think in addition to just the hustle that I've seen and just the grit that I think the older generations had to have to live through those experiences, at the same time, I want to pass that on to the next generation, right? Is make additional changes, make their life a little bit easier as well. So I think being those change agents is something that April, your generation, and Megan, even yours, pushed for. And I think that's something that I see Gen Z doing it a lot too, right? They really push for their work-life balance in a lot of ways. So I think it's kind of passing that along as well that I really like.
Well, and I think part of it for me was just realizing that, you know, I didn't want my work to define me. You know, my life is not just being a lawyer. And I would see people that were a generation or two above me, in particular men, obviously, because there weren't that many women in the first place. But, you know, they were working until they were way past retirement. And I'm sure they were financially in a position to retire, but they stayed. And I realized it's because being an attorney to them was their entire identity. And I realized I just don't want it to be that. So I don't know if you have anything to say about that, because I know, you know, you're at different points in your careers.
I think I'm still at the point, and maybe I hope I always stay at this point, where I love my job. I am perfectly fine with being defined as being an attorney. But I think it comes from, as Megan was talking about, a place of joy. Like, the work brings me a lot of joy, even the late nights, even when it's hard. It's a fun job and I really love what we do. But I think we also have the flexibility now to walk away from that we don't have to stay with that definition if it no longer brings us joy. So I think I still have that mindset right now, but it comes from a different place, not one of obligation or there being nothing else, but because I truly love the job.
How about you, Megan?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything Kate said, that I think, you know, I clearly still define myself in a way as an attorney. I mean, this has been 14 years of my life, and I've made a lot of sacrifices to get here. I mean, just because I had reduced hours and I wasn't billing 2,000 hours a year doesn't mean I didn't sacrifice. Doesn't mean I missed things. Doesn't mean I didn't have incredibly stressful periods in my life. So there was a lot of sacrifice to get here. And in some ways, it makes it that much sweeter because you kind of feel like you conquered the mountain. You're like, okay, the sacrifice was worth it. But I do think that it's because I get a lot of joy out of what I do. I really enjoy who I work with. I've been here for over 14 years. And I'm here because the firm has supported me in this path I took, and not so much the firm in quotes, but the people I work with day to day. And so I really enjoy those relationships. I love my clients. I mean, I just like, I get such joy out of talking to these inventors. And I think the day that I feel like that joy is gone is when I'm going to have to really have to reevaluate, because I don't do it because I have to. I do it because I enjoy it. And so I don't mind having that be a little piece of my identity, because it's part of my identity that makes me happy.
Oh, and I agree with what both of you said. I think from, and I've been an attorney for going on 28 years now. So, and it definitely brings me joy. And I know Kate knows what I'm talking about. We had something back at the beginning of October that was, you know, the epitome of grind. And then we got a huge, really wonderful result for our client last week. And it just, I still get really excited about those kinds of things. And the thing, especially, you know, lots of different things, whether you do deals or litigation or whatever it is, I've told people in the past, if they're associates and they don't find sort of the upside of that, going to trial, doing a hearing, whatever it is, to be something that they're going to be like, you know, like really excited about, then they probably shouldn't be doing the grind part, right? So I love it. It's more, I think, from me as someone who's been doing this for quite some time, seeing people who held on a little bit too long and it was all of their identity. You know, if I go to a party or I meet someone new, I don't have to lead with the fact that I'm a lawyer and talk about that. It's about other things in my life, and it probably comes up in the conversation, but it's not 95% of my identity, I guess, is where I'm coming from.
Yeah. One thing that I think it's very easy to have become trapped in it, because there is such a need to devote so much of your lives to really be successful in this role and at a firm, you know, like our firm. You really need to be committed. And so if you're committing that much of yourself to it, inherently, you know, it's going to take over a large amount of kind of who you are. But one thing that I've spent the last couple of years, when it was really ramping up and I was kind of starting to feel like it was taking over a little bit more, was I did kind of take those positive steps to be like, well, what can I do outside of this that brings me joy? Like, what's another source of joy, so that I don't feel like, you know, you hang on because that's kind of all you've done and it's your source of identity. And, you know, I think people say the same thing with doctors, that when you leave practice, the idea of not being called, you know, a doctor is just so traumatizing that people just hang on. So I started going out and trying to find other ways and other things that bring me joy. And I've kind of invested in that as a way of investing in myself to make sure that I kind of have more, you know, aspects to my personality, more aspects to my interests, more things to talk about when I meet someone, so that I'm not just like, well, all I do is parent and mom and work. So that's all I have to talk to you about.
What are one of those other sources of joy?
Oh, I have a couple good ones. So my firm belief is that you need to do things that are selfish. And selfish in a really positive way. I use that word very positively, meaning, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, take a nice bath or, you know, have time to yourself. And those are great, but those don't personally recharge me and bring me that joy I need. So I started doing things that were totally unnecessary just because they make me happy. So I took up horseback riding again, which I did when I was younger. And I love it, because when you're on a 3,000-pound animal, you cannot think about anything except what you're doing in that moment. So it's almost meditative. I can't worry about checking my email or, you know, anything like that. I have to be purely present in the moment. And then I started going to concerts. I have been to, and I will shamelessly tell people, I have been to, I think now, 5 or 6 Harry Styles concerts in the last 18 months. And I just do it because it's fun. I go, I get dressed up, I make my friends come sometimes, and we just have a really great time, and it's just fun. And I found that to really be recharging, you know, when it's when life is really, you know, sometimes very difficult.
When those both sound like there's an aspect of freedom, feeling free as well.
Yes, I think that's absolutely true, especially, you know, like the concert going, people laugh. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? It's like a 90-minute dance party. I get to go and especially if you go, if you've ever been to a Harry Styles concert, you'll know that it is a very inclusive, happy, fun, energetic crowd where everybody just kind of shows up. But it's like I said, it's a 90-minute dance party. You can just go, feel very free, have a great time. And again, there's no purpose to it. Like, it is purely a selfish escapade for me, but I love it. And I come home happier. And my husband encourages it because he's like, you're just so happy, you know, for weeks after, you just kind of have this, you know, recharged, re-energized vibe. And so works out very well for everybody around me. What do you guys do for your energy recharging? I'm always curious to ask people that.
Kate, do you want to go first?
I can. My answer's not very good because I've had some balance problems over the last year as part of the more junior associate grinding it out thing. I run. Running's kind of my favorite thing. It's not in the same way that being on a horse is that's all you can think about. When I run, my mind is blank. Like there leaves no room for thinking about work or anything because I'm focused on my breath and my body. But what I try and do, and this is actually something Roger Wiley told me about, is I don't go the same routes anymore. Like I used to have a set route that's like my 3 mile run, my 4 mile run, my 6 mile run. But now I just go and I try and go somewhere different or I pick a new path. And so it's a little bit of new. It's a little bit of exploring. And I'm very directionally challenged. So it is something I have to pay attention to not get lost and make sure my 3 mile run doesn't turn into a 20 mile run. But I really enjoy kind of that. It's a mini adventure in a day where it's just I will run across a new neighborhood I haven't seen before and look at the houses or find a new park I haven't been to before or get lost in a new subdivision and need to find my way out. But that's kind of what I do on a almost daily basis, not daily, probably a couple times a week to just try and reset and get some time away from work.
Same thing. I do running. When I was younger, I was a competitive runner. Now I just, you know, kind of run at a much slower pace and try to just enjoy it. I do think I work through things in my mind while I'm running. Just naturally, things are going through, so I don't feel like I'm, you know, just letting everything go. The other thing I do is I do Pilates, which I think is really helpful because I have to focus on what I'm doing and what the instructor's telling me to do. And then what I've been doing, I haven't missed a week since June of 2020. I've been doing SoulCycle, and I know, but it's like I like the instructors with the really good music, and I do get that escape, Megan, like you were saying. And then one other thing I know Kate knows about that I picked up recently is doing pottery on a pottery wheel. You have to focus on what you're doing. You cannot check your email. So that I'm thinking someday when I retire, that can be one of the hobbies or things I do. I'm not going to be like going to like flea markets and selling my stuff, but some people may get it as gifts.
I love that. Yeah, I think there's that common theme of it's really hard for us to sometimes detach and to, you know, unplug. We're always checking our devices, always checking on things. So anything we can find that, you know, allows you to kind of get outside your head and get up and force yourself to unplug for a little bit, I feel like it's just so beneficial.
Let's pivot to the theme for the 2023 International Women's Day campaign. And the theme is hashtag embrace equity. What does that mean to you, Megan?
To me, I think it means embracing giving people opportunities to succeed, even given their differences. And so ensuring that everybody has the opportunity to kind of succeed and however they define that, based on their own merits and based on, you know, what they can value they can add. And I think that can be very different for a lot of different people.
How about you, Kate?
I like the word embrace because it implies action. And I think there's a lot of people who talk about equity and who talk about accepting people and diversity and making it goals. But I think the embrace part to me means taking actual actions to further equity, even if it's not perfect, right? It's not just, it, maybe it is a conversation. For some people, that might be their first action, is just to learn something about someone else. But I think it's a step further, right? As Megan said, it could be actually helping someone to achieve their goals. It could be actually implementing a program. It can be taking it the next step. So to me, it means not just talking about it, but doing something about it.
So Megan, our closing question that we usually have, as you know, is what advice would you give to someone who finds themselves to be the first or the only in the room?
I think my advice would be to embrace it. I think I would say to know that you're there for a reason, and then to look internally and not be too concerned about that role kind of defining you and being concerned about, well, I'm the only, so I have to be the everything for people like me. And instead, you know, you're going to be most successful, I think, if you are a little selfish and you think about, well, what do I want? What is my definition of success? And what do I need to do to get there? And just kind of focus on what you need to do to succeed in the way in which you define it. And be a little selfish in that way, because I think there's a lot of pressure to represent for everyone who's like you if you're in that situation. And I think if you're under that kind of self-imposed scrutiny, that's going to make it very difficult to succeed, because you're going to need to really be all in to succeed. And I think that requires you have a very clear path of where you want to end up.
I love that. I have to say, I'm really looking forward to season 3. I think we've got some fabulous guests lined up for Women's History Month, and really excited about you being the new co-host with Kate and me. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for letting me join you guys. I'm really excited for the season.
Thank you for joining us today. Subscribe to Sidebars on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or your preferred platform. And don't forget to rate or leave a review.
If you have any questions or feedback on this or any other episode of Sidebars, or if there's a topic for a future episode that you'd be interested in having us explore, please reach out to us at socialmedia@kilpatricktownsend.com.
If you enjoyed Sidebars, we invite you to check out Kilpatrick Townsend's Medicine and Molecules blog at kilpatricktownsend.com to read, watch, and listen to other related insight. You can also follow us on social media and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We'll put that information in the show notes. The opinions expressed on this podcast are our own and are not those of Kilpatrick Townsend.